This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, this is Jeanette Lefebvre, your guest host tonight on the People Speak Radio. At the People Speak, we believe that the voices and actions of all people are needed to make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak Radio on bbsradio.com, live every Tuesday night from 9 to 9:55 p.m. Eastern Time. You can log into our website, thepeoplespeakradio.com, to join us live, listen to archives of previous shows, or join us in our live chat room on Pal Talk. You can listen by phone, dial 760-569-7676, enter access code 192919#, when prompted, or on your computer or smartphone, go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2, and click the listen icon. The People Speak invites audience participation. If you have questions and comments for our guest or topic during the show, please call toll-free in the USA and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Tonight, my guest is Karen Hudis, an economist and lawyer practicing in Bethesda, Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C. She studied economics at the University of Amsterdam and went to Yale Law School. She then went into private practice in security law, worked for 8 years at the Export-Import Bank of the U.S., and for 21 years in the legal department of the World Bank. But it is the latest addition to Karen's rather impressive resume that brings her here to talk to us tonight, that of whistleblower. Good evening, Karen. How are you this evening?
Great. Thanks for having me, Jeanette.
As I said, I do a brief background, but other than, again, that incredibly impressive resume, what is it that brings you out speaking out at this point in time?
Well, we've got to get our act together or we're going to land in the soup. That's it, pretty much.
Okay, with the whistleblowing, now I know you were involved with the World Bank. You left in 2007. Coincidentally, the same year that Dominique Strauss-Kahn was appointed the managing director. And then since then, we've watched his career take a downward spiral. And given the things I've seen that you've been reporting to our Congress on the problems with the World Bank, can you tell us if there's a connection there?
Yeah, there certainly is. I saw what was happening. Dominique Strauss-Kahn was actually there as the managing director maybe a year or so before I left. And I saw that he was getting set up because he had had an affair with a woman who was working as an economist in the IMF. And then all of a sudden, there was a confidential investigation into this affair that made it into the Wall Street Journal. And I knew that the Wall Street Journal was just sort of, a PR rag. And so when I saw that article running, I went to Dominique Strauss-Kahn. I thought he was going to be interested in having the World Bank and the IMF function properly. I didn't realize who he was. I was very naive. In any event, so what I did was I gave Dominique Strauss-Kahn some information on what the president of the World Bank had been doing wrong, some incriminating information, because Robert Zoellick had been breaking all the rules, and then he got into trouble with the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, and I gave Dominique Strauss-Kahn that information. And what Dominique Strauss-Kahn did was he conned Robert Zoellick, and the next thing I knew, Dominique Strauss-Kahn's lawyer was appointed as the general counsel of the World Bank, and you can't have that. The lawyer in the World Bank has got to be above the fray, and so the lawyer who works at the World Bank is supposed to go through an executive search firm, which Dominique Strauss-Kahn's lawyer did not. And then, you know, when Dominique Strauss-Kahn got in trouble in New York, I knew, again, that that was going to be a problem. And I went to my congressman, because you can't be threatening other people's ambassadors and senior appointees. And we see this now where Germany is refusing to share intelligence information because how we're blackmailing their diplomats. As a matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, a military helicopter, a German military helicopter, buzzed our consulate in Frankfurt. This is pretty serious. So, yeah, I did see what was going on with Dominique Strauss-Kahn. But Dominique Strauss-Kahn misused the information I gave him.
Okay, so now I'm having a lot of trouble understanding the structure of the World Bank. I know, like in the U.S., our Federal Reserve System is a system of private banks. Can you help describe this structure so we can understand the wrongdoing that you were identifying?
Yes. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund are right in the heart of the international financial system. They're like a big co-op. Think of a co-op where all of the farmers own a share of irrigation machinery. Well, in the case of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, it's 188 countries, and their ministers of finance get together twice a year. And in between that, there are 25 members of the board who are ambassadors of the countries. The biggest seven countries have their own single appointee. So the United States, UK, Germany, France, Russia, China, Japan, yeah, that's seven. Well, there's a couple more. Did I say Saudi Arabia? Anyway, but then the rest of the countries share an executive director, and these people are there in residence, and they're supposed to be running the organization like any board of executive directors. And so when I started experiencing real problems at the World Bank with the corruption that I was running across, I knew that this had to be nipped in the bud. And one of the reasons I knew this is because the World Bank is a knowledge bank. And one of the things that the World Bank does is it attracts all kinds of software and information to put in its projects. One of the pieces of software that came to the World Bank for us to put in our projects was a very accurate game theory model, which had actually been developed in the U.S. intelligence community and the Defense Department. What this is it uses computer modeling to simulate how coalitions are going to form. It was invented by a political scientist who took all of his knowledge of political science and all of the power of modeling, game theory modeling. And what you needed to know was, in any given issue, who are the parties that are interested in it? Who are the stakeholders? How powerful are they? Where do they stand on the issue? And also, how important is that issue to them? So, for example, if you're talking about the president, there are lots of competing issues on his desk. But if you're talking about the staff association, that's their one single issue. So you have to come up with numbers on this. And I modeled rule of law at the World Bank in 2004. I didn't do a very good job of one of the items because I was very naive. I knew that the media played a role in this, but I thought they would be helping. I didn't know that they were part of the problem, which is what they are. They're owned by the very corrupt banks and other financial entities that have dominated the capital markets of the world. And they are absolutely preventing the American people and the rest of the people in the world from knowing what's actually going on. So the alternative media, I didn't know how to find the alternative media for the longest time, but I started working with other whistleblowers, and one in particular, a guy named Mark Novitsky, got me rolling. And you know, so it's been snowballing now, and I think my voice is getting heard.
Yeah, in fact, when it was proposed to me to interview you a week or so ago, I hadn't heard of you. But I've encountered a dozen people or so in the interim that have indeed and were anxious that this interview take place. Now, from everything you're describing, my first thought was like the UN of banking, and my second thought was a giant conspiracy, which seems to be a dirty word in the world today. Which of those would be more accurate?
Neither. What it is it's a cooperative. And so it's a microcosm of the world. And so what you have is, if you have a country which is transparent and is interested in its people, then you're going to have a country that's going to benefit from the World Bank. If you have a country which is managed by thugs, then it's obviously going to be selling its citizens' assets. And so what I've been doing in the time that I was thrown out of the World Bank is I've been following this very accurate blueprint for rule of law. And I've been collaborating with anybody that isn't going to run away from me. I've made a total nuisance and fool of myself, except that some people have really, really helped. And in particular, there's a woman, a Scottish woman named Elaine Colville, and she and I have pried open the United Kingdom Parliament. I've had three statements on their website, and the last statement, it was a joint statement. That was in July. And what happened was, when we got up on the UK Parliament website, that was when the stakeholder analysis started predicting with 90 to 95% accuracy that we were going to get rule of law in the world. And that's what's happening. What happened in 2004 when I ran the model was I didn't realize that we were talking about the world. I didn't realize that my model was a microcosm of the world. I was just looking at corruption inside the World Bank, and I had modeled that. And what I saw in 2004 was that if the United States did not start playing by the rules, that we were going to lose the ability to handpick the president of the World Bank. That was something called the Gentleman's Agreement, and that lasted for 66 years. And so I was doing what a lawyer inside an organization that has bonds on the capital markets does when there's a cover-up. And what happened was, there was a cover-up in the Philippines. And now it turns out that the Philippines is a very, very important country. I should say who hired me into the legal department at the World Bank. It was an Egyptian lawyer, Ibrahim Shihada, who had been the general counsel of OPIC. And he made some really incredible hires. He hired a woman named Sabine Schlemmer-Scholte, a German lawyer. And the two of us wrote an article that we published in 2009 about all of the corruption at the World Bank. And Germany is a very, very key player. Because when I'm talking about this stakeholder analysis, it showed that Germany was going to leave the transatlantic alliance and was going to ally with Russia if we didn't get our act together. And that, you know, when not only was Germany buzzing our consulate in Frankfurt, but they asked to get their gold back that the Federal Reserve was holding. They asked for 300 tons of gold back. And the Federal Reserve refused. They said, we'll give it to you in 7 years. That's an act of war. So I have been all over the Department of Defense, because it turns out that this stakeholder analysis that, you know, that I'm telling you about, I found out who inside the Department of Defense was working on that project. And they know how accurate that model is. And they know that we're going to lose NATO if we don't start playing by the rules. So what I did today, I'm going to fast forward to where we are on this, is that this Federal Reserve has got Congress in its hip pocket. And anybody who decides that they want to try to represent the American people vis-a-vis this group finds that they're running against candidates with endless campaign finance. That's what happened to Senator Lugar. He wrote three letters to the World Bank. When I went to him and I showed him what was going on, I gave him a copy of, I gave him lots of documentation, but I told him, for example, that the representative of the German government on the board, Eckhard Deutscher, who was the most senior diplomat, he was at that point the dean of the board, I said that he was complaining that the board was being treated like a mushroom kept in the dark and covered with fertilizer. So Senator Lugar wrote three letters to the World Bank saying, don't fire this lady. When they fired me, he then teamed up with Senator Leahy and Senator Bayh and asked for a Government Accountability Office investigation, which the World Bank stonewalled. And so I just kept going back to the Congress and saying, you know, why aren't you guys doing anything? We're going to lose the gentleman's agreement. And that's what happened in 2010. And then I got really frantic. I said, do you realize that this model, which is 90 to 95% accurate, is now predicting a currency war? So that is how I happened to be on Russia Today TV yesterday. For I think they broadcast my 30-minute interview four times. Because they are doing exactly the same thing that Germany did when they buzzed their helicopter over the consulate. They said, listen to Karen. And it's not listen to Karen, it's listen to the World Bank whistleblowers. Stop breaking the rules. This is a co-op. We're, you know, you can't run this place into the ground. It's too important for the world. We don't want to be in a currency war. That's what they're saying. And there is an annual meeting going on tomorrow. And I cannot get in the building, although 188 ministers of finance want me there. I have been writing to the embassies, and I have been, you know, writing to all of the states, the governors, and I finally ended up nagging the counties. So the chief executive of Montgomery County, which is where I live, was elected to the chairman of the board of the American Association of Counties. So what you have is you have the government representatives fully aware of all of this corruption, and the people not so much, because the media is owned by these corrupt people.
Now, when you're speaking of the corruption in the World Bank, is it a coordinated corruption, or is it just the individual corruption of a bunch of greedy men with too much power?
It is a conglomerate that thinks it's above the law. And I can tell you about this with absolute certainty because there are some mathematicians who modeled all of the owners of the 43,000 transnational companies on the world's capital markets, the Federal Institute of Technology, and anybody that wants to read the study can read it. And what they found out was this conglomerate has what you call interlocking directors. They have the same directors going to all of the financial entities. That's how you had the LIBOR rigging. And the SEC is sitting there. Every now and then they may enforce the insider trading laws against the little fish. But the big fish, these crooks, are, you know, I mean, didn't you see the article, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, where the big companies were getting a jump on the economic information ahead of the rest of the market? And when you've got these, you know, trading programs, you can really clean up with that kind of a jump.
I also read that our Congress gets information ahead of the trades occurring, and that counts as insider information. And though there's rules against them using it, it hasn't really stopped them. Now, you've said play by the rules when you keep saying if you don't play by the rules. Are you referring to the USA and its member of the board alone, or are we a part of a group that's not playing by the rules?
That's a beautiful question. That's a wonderful question. Let me answer that by saying I have been using the securities laws all over the world, and also the state securities laws. If you own a World Bank bond, and the World Bank issues bonds, $180 billion worth, what they do is they issue bonds, they get the proceeds from the bonds, and they use those proceeds to themselves trade on the markets. They're the ones that invented all the derivatives. And they use the money that they earn to pay for the World Bank budget. So first of all, I was a lawyer inside the organization, and I saw that they were not giving accurate financial information. So I you know, I did my job. I went first inside. I went up to the audit committee. When that didn't work, I was following the rules of professional responsibility for lawyers. So then I went to the Congress. When that didn't work and I got fired, I bought a World Bank bond. And then I sued not only the World Bank, but I sued KPMG, which was the World Bank auditor. And I said they were not following the audit standards. They could not give an unqualified audit opinion because I knew that anybody that tried to correct misinformation, inaccurate financial reporting, was going to get fired. So you had no confidence in the financial statements. And so when I went to the Serious Fraud Office of the UK in 2010, they called the SEC, and the SEC stonewalled them. At that point, I didn't understand where all this corruption was coming from. So I had, just think of somebody taking a barium pill. I have been diagnosing the world corruption because I keep, you know, trying to resolve problems and, you know, documenting them and then blabbing them all over the place. So I have a beautiful chronology of what I'm telling you. And I went and I testified in the European Parliament. And then the European Parliament took this chronology and they sent it back to the World Bank and they said, what are you planning on doing with this? And the World Bank, you know, just kept going and ignored them and stonewalled them because I could not get my story out. So what I ended up doing was documenting the degree of complicity of the media beautifully. I went to the National Press Club. I mean, I have got the whole thing perfectly documented. And when I say I've been working with other whistleblowers and we've been sharing information. And then at a certain point when the Congress was being corrupt, do you remember Matt Taibbi was writing about how the SEC was shredding documents?
Yes, I remember that.
Okay. So Elaine Colville, this UK whistleblower, said, Karen, why don't you find people who are also SEC whistleblowers? And that's how I stumbled on Mark Novitsky, who worked for Teletech. And he's been, and Teletech is a company that shares all of the personal information. You know, they do software for marketing. And then they share that with the government. So the government knows everything you have ever bought. Because Teletech is totally porous. And what Mark documented was that companies like Teletech that give all of this information about the customers to the government have a free pass. The SEC will not punish them. So, I mean, we've just been sharing information. And now that my story is getting further and further out, I'm learning more and more stuff every day. It's just, it's gorgeous, you know, the degree of specificity we have for what's wrong and how to fix it, because there have been people who have been very, you know, hard at work trying to fix problems that they see. And, you know, this business about somebody thinks an elephant is a rope because they feel the tail, and the other one thinks it's a tree because they feel the leg. Yeah. Well, we are getting such great information about diagnosing what's wrong here. So I'll tell you what I learned today about somebody. I had mentioned on one of the interviews that it would be really a good idea to try to fix what's broken in our Constitution. So there's a fellow who has devoted his life to using one of the provisions in the Constitution that you can call a constitutional convention. And they got the states, the requisite number of states, to call the Constitution, but the U.S. Congress refused to do it. They just sort of stonewalled the people of the United States. Can you imagine? And, you know, so when you get that kind of cooperation. So I said to him, look, I think it's a good idea that we have this convention. But in the meantime, the American people have been deliberately dumbed down and kept in the dark. And we're not going to have access using the media to tell people how to fix the Constitution. So let's do this convention, but let's make sure everybody's on board first. Yeah. So, I mean, this is how we're working now. But the part that has me the most concerned and that I wanted, you know, I'm so grateful to you for giving me the opportunity to talk to your audience. I know you reach a lot of people. I have got to get into the World Bank tomorrow. And what happened when there was a spring meeting in April was the security guards wouldn't let me in. They're a group called Allied Barton that's owned by the crooks that think they're above the law. And so even though I had a valid security badge that was given to me by, this is the president of Poland's national bank, Marek Belka, I had a security badge. Those idiots wouldn't let me in the door. So I wrote today, there's something called the Council of Governors. These are the people that are supposed to keep us from having martial law. And I've been writing them and giving them, you know, a description of what all is happening here. And I said, I would like to make sure that I can get back into the annual meetings. There's a lot riding on this. We certainly don't want a currency war, which is what we're going to get if I can't get into those meetings. You know, and don't, you know, I gave them the link to the Russia Today TV. I said, it's no coincidence that RTTV wanted me on there. I'm talking to you from them. And I said the same thing about Germany. Do you want NATO or don't you? Are you going to make sure I can get in that those meetings? Well, I haven't heard back. As a matter of fact, I sent an email to an Admiral Sandy Winfeld, who is somebody who was talking about how adroit the military was in anticipating what they needed. I said, well, you certainly need currency. You don't need a weak dollar. Are you going to make sure that the Secret Service is not going to prevent me from going in those meetings? And what happened was it bounced back. So I had to go back and send the thing to the webmaster. I've been sending faxes, but I don't have a clear answer. What's going to happen tomorrow?
Okay, Karen, I'm told I have a guest on the phone waiting. I usually don't take questions until the second half of the show. And after this call, we will have to take a short break. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, hi. This is Rock, and I'm from California. Dan, my question to you today is, do you know if the radio frequency identification device is part of the world banking thing that they're trying to put into everybody here in the United States along with the Obamacare?
Were you
said Diane, do you mean Karen?
Yeah, Karen.
Okay, I'll tell you what I know. What I know is that there is now a plan that the airwaves can be totally dominated by the presidency. It's local. It's not the World Bank. But yes, you're right to be concerned. Why should they jam the radio waves? This is ridiculous. This is terrible. This should never have happened.
Okay,
the second part of my question, the meetings that you're supposedly kept out of, are those the Bilderberg meetings?
No, let me tell you the difference. Bilderberg, that's private. Those are the people that think they own the earth. And the World Bank, this is public. It's the government's. It's supposed to be on behalf of the people. But what happened is the Bilderbergers intimidated all of the governments. They bribed people. They scared people. And if people didn't play by their book, they also killed people. That's who the Bilderbergers are.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Now, at this point, we have to take a short break. I want to remind the listeners that this is the PeopleSpeakRadio.com, live on BBSRadio.com, Internet Radio.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to VBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to The People Speak, live on bbsradio.com, internet radio. Again, I'm Jeanette Lefebvre with our guest tonight, Karen Hudis, attorney, economist, and whistleblower. During this portion of the show, you can call in questions and comments for our guest toll-free in the USA and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Now, on the break, I informed Karen that we have a number of questions stacking up in text from audience members, and I'm going to get right to them. I'm going to try to take them in the order that I received them. However, some tend to lead to others, and we may jump around. Karen, first question is from Ted in Illinois. Karen, do you think it's possible to find out which of the global elites placed the put options and did the insider trading on the airline stocks prior to the 9/11 attacks?
That would have been an easy question, but I understand that a lot of memory banks were erased, and that was the whole point. One of the things that happened just prior to the 9/11 was there were thousands of tons, I'm not kidding, thousands of tons of gold under the towers that went missing. A lot went missing.
And that gold has never been found? Because I've heard it both ways.
Well, I don't know if it's been found, but I can tell you there's a lot more gold, by the way, that people know about that's out there that needs to be brought regularized. There are people that are earning money on that gold right now that aren't entitled to it. That gold is supposed to be for the people. One of the things that was going to happen with that gold was JFK, 11 days before he was murdered, he had signed an agreement that this gold was going to underpin the U.S. currency so that we wouldn't have the crooks that I'm telling you about corrupting the world.
Okay, now the link between JFK's assassination and intentions he had towards the global currency and the monetary systems has been made before. Also, when I was speaking to Ellen Brown a few weeks ago, and I know that you're familiar with her, she pointed out a link that Abraham Lincoln was also a president who had been advocating for a public bank option, more transparency in the bank system, accountability to the people with a similar end.
That's right. And I think Ronald Reagan was heading in that direction as well before he was shot.
Okay, so then let's move into the next question, because as I said, they're stacking up. Now, so Karen, what are the chances we take back the power to issue our own U.S. currency, to end the private Federal Reserve like was intended when Abraham Lincoln did the greenbacks, when JFK attempted it? Since these men died in the effort, what are the odds that we can do anything about this?
Absolutely spectacular. And the reason why is because the fiat currency is going down. It's going down, and we've got to do something about it. And what they wanted to do about it was they wanted to have us in World War III with Syria. When that didn't work, they started talking about Iran. Then all of a sudden, we had a problem in Korea. What they hadn't counted on was that we were able to get the word out and say that these guys are absolutely mistaken. We are taking our currency back, and they are fired.
So how do we do that? I mean, just to say it's going to happen, what would the transition period be like? Who would have to act?
That is why those guys don't want me in the meeting tomorrow. And that's why the Russians and the Germans and everybody else does. Because this gold that I'm telling you about, I know who's got the signature authority for it. He's on a plane on his way to Washington, and we have got to get in there, and we have got to sit down at the table, and we have got to agree with 188 countries how we're going to turn this situation around. Or, here's the other alternative. If we don't, there's something called gold backwardation. That means that people think the currency is absolutely worthless, and they will not sell their gold. And when that happens, you have an inability to finance international trade. And then you have, you have pestilence because people can't buy medicine or anything that you need. But I can tell you that it's 90 to 95% likely that we do get into that meeting. I want everybody in this listening to this program to bombard the Council on Governors. That's, or just go to your governor or go to your local county, because I've told the counties, the National Association of Counties, all about this corruption. It's corruption and it needs to end. In 1913, when the Federal Reserve System was enacted, that was done when three quarters of the congressmen had gone home. I mean, it's been a huge ripoff.
Okay, so now that leads right to the next question. Does the charter of the Federal Reserve expire this year? That would be from Winston in Vermont.
You know, that is something that a lot of people have said, and I've looked at the statute. I've looked to see where there's a sunset provision. I don't think that's there. I know a lot of people say it's there, but I don't think it's there. What's really there is that the currency that they've been issuing. And I think it was just yesterday, there's another, I forget how many billion that they're issuing. They're declaring student loans and other loans as currency, because this is currency that's backed by debt. It's not backed by assets. That's why we have to pay interest on it. We have to pay interest on our own currency. That is, they've got a lot of nerve, those crooks.
Yeah, so that was what Ellen Brown advocates for, a public banking, because then we would own our own money and we wouldn't have to pay. We would collect interest on it rather than pay interest on it.
That's right. And so if you feel really energetic and you want to get in touch with the people in your state, not only should you be advocating for a state-owned bank like they have in North Dakota, but you should also be asking for there to be legal tender for precious metals. That's something that the states can declare, and that's something that you ought to ask to be enacted in your state.
Yes, that's exactly what Ellen Brown advised as well. Now, I have Rock back on the line with another question. Apparently, he thought while you were talking. Go ahead.
Yes, Karen. Sorry about earlier with the name mistake. Karen, is it so that Syria was attacked, not Syria, but Libya was attacked because of their intentions to go with the gold standards, and the same is for Syria and Iran and these other nations that are not currently a part of the monetary fund?
No, they are part of the monetary fund, but bingo, that's why they were being treated as pariahs. Absolutely. And something that you also ought to realize is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They're called the BRICS countries. They have decided that they're not going to use dollars to finance the trade among those countries. They're going to use offsets, and anybody that ends up owing money at the end is going to pay in gold, not dollars. So that means that the demand for dollar as an international reserve currency is tanking.
Okay, now, can I interject here? Because something when we were talking about Dominique Strauss-Kahn, and when I was reading through stuff, it was mentioned that he advocated something called special drawing rights, or SDRs, instead of the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency, and I'm not quite sure what that means.
Okay, the special drawing right, that is a basket of currencies. The dollar is part of it. But the fact of the matter is we do not want to have a one world currency. It's a disaster. Why should we do that? Why should we give fiat bankers our powers? Why should we be paying interest on debt? We should be having asset-backed currency, which is what everybody needs. It would liberate us. That's a con game. We don't want that.
Okay, so now leading into the next question from Edward in Florida, what would your analysis of the future health of the U.S. bond market in the U.S. dollar? And given our current crisis in Washington, that's pretty relevant at the moment.
Yes. And the other thing that people ought to know is our credit rating. Our credit rating. It is absolutely abysmal because when you don't have rule of law, you really don't have assurance that the debts are going to be repaid. And there's going to be a new credit rating agency. I had, by the way, been telling all the credit rating agencies about all of the corruption. And they know it full well. And Standard & Poor's had lowered the U.S. credit rating, at which point Eric Holder started suing them. And then what Standard & Poor's said was they said, well, you know, since the dollar is the international reserve currency, I think we can, we don't have to lower it. But they knew full well that the continuation of the dollar as an international reserve currency is very much up in the air. That was a barbed answer that they gave. So the answer is that it's not brilliant. It's terrible. The prospects are terrible, except if we start playing by the rules. And by that, I mean we get rid of the Federal Reserve System. We don't need them. We can figure out a good way to do a transition so it's not abrupt, so we don't throw our economy into a tailspin. But we need to transition to asset-backed currency, which is issued by the Treasury Department or by the state banks. I mean, well, the state banks can't issue currency, but they can recognize precious metals as legal tender. So this is a long answer, but the short answer is that we absolutely need to do something about where we currently are, or we are going to be in the soup.
Okay, now from Cheryl in Massachusetts, do you see any way of holding the corrupt members of the World Bank accountable? What's to prevent them from just ignoring any publicity of their wrongdoings and just continue to carry on?
That is the question. And the answer to that question is whether the people that are listening to this believe in themselves and believe in our ability to get the job done. And I can tell you that stakeholder analysis is 90 to 95% accurate. And it is predicting that we will end up with rule of law and we will hold these banksters to account and they will not continue to rip off the world. Why do you think RTTV put me on there and gave me the chance to tell the American citizens about what was going on? It's because they had to. Our media wasn't getting the job done. This story should have been out there years ago. It shouldn't have gotten to this pass.
Okay, now I'm going to back up because somebody's backing up a question, because when you said that we don't want a world currency, a basket of currencies that's a world currency, and they want specifically, why can't we do a basket currency that is asset-backed?
Because we don't want a one-world government. We want every single government to be accountable to its citizens. We don't want to live in a homogenized world. Why would we do that? And you better believe that when you have that kind of centralized power, it's going to be very difficult for there to be transparency and for people to hold the others accountable.
Oh, Okay, now I've got to back up here to an earlier question from Mike in California. Can you speak briefly about being jailed by Eric Holder, when and how this happened?
Yes. I was very astonished that this happened. What happened was in April, I went to the meetings of the World Bank and IMF, and I told you, I've been reinstated by these ministers of finance. They gave me a badge. I went in the first day, and then when I went back the second day, the Secret Service wouldn't let me in. So I said, why, you know, you have no right to keep me out. And then they went and they got a piece of paper. They got a flunky to say that I wasn't allowed in. And I said, this flunky does not have the authority to overrule 188 ministers of finance. And they took this barring notice. And I then went to the D.C. police, the commissioner, Michael Reese. And I said, if you have any question whether this guy is a flunky or whether he can overrule the ministers of finance, you can call up Dr. Belka. Here's his email address. And I said, and I'm going back to the World Bank in the afternoon. So I went back in the afternoon, and two cops came, and they said, you're not supposed to be here. And I said, why don't you go call your, Commander Reese? And one of them said, well, why don't you just go see him? So I pivoted, and I was walking out the door, and the other one said, no, you're arrested, and put my hands behind my back in handcuffs, paraded me into his car, left me in front of the World Bank for an hour as a spectacle, and then drove me to the stinking jail at the second precinct and threw me in there for 3 hours. I was mad. I can tell you, Commander Reese is going to have a little bit of a problem with 188 ministers of finance when I finish with him.
Okay,
but I have to finish telling the story. Then the district attorney of the District of Columbia thought it was a good idea to try to make me, to prosecute me. So I said, well, you can't arraign me because I happen to be immune, because I happened to have been inside the World Bank at the request of the people who run that institution, and I'm immune. So, you know, things went back and forth for a couple of months, and then the judge finally dismissed the case. I had to fire my lawyer because somebody bought him off. But in any event, it was a whole spectacle. I'm very angry about it. And I have told the people in the District of Columbia, if they do not exonerate me and expunge my records, the World Bank is going to leave Washington and they will lose their biggest employer. And they will. I now have the corrupt judge who is refusing to exonerate my arrest record. I've got a lien on her bond because she's corrupt. So that's the story of my arrest.
Okay, we have one last question, and then after you finish that, if we can sum up, because we have like about 2, maybe 3 minutes left to fill in here. From Smith in Vermont, the Constitution says nothing about gold and silver should be used as money. Why is it so hard to throw the fiat money masters out of this nation?
Excuse me? Which provision in the Constitution are you reading? It does say that. The states are authorized to declare that as legal tender. The reason it's so hard to fire the Fed is because they have bought up the media. And because American citizens, when they're educated in school, are dumbed down. We have got to get our country back. It's not going to be handed back to us. We have got to get, turn off the TV and start educating yourself. So, that's my answer to that question. I've gotten all riled up when I was talking about Eric Holder.
I understand. We've encountered a few of our state getting increasingly repressive. I hope my producer is telling me I have another caller on the line. And if we have time to go ahead with it, go ahead, caller. Hello?
Yes, I get.
Hello, go ahead.
Yes, it's me, Rock, again. My question to her is, does she have any clue to where the gold is? Is there gold still left in Fort Knox, or did they rob it out of there?
All right, there is a little bit of gold left. There was an audit But most of the gold, I can tell you, it's in banks all over the world, and there's a lot of it. And if people will just do their jobs as citizens, we can all benefit from it. It's the crooks that are keeping it locked up so that they can imprison us with their stupid fiat currency that we absolutely do not need.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we're about out of time tonight. Karen, I want to thank you for being with us tonight on the show. It's been a lot of information, and I know there is so much more we could have covered. For those of you listening, this is Jeanette Lefebvre on the People Speak Radio. Next week, it'll be Vincent Bugliosio on the assassination of JFK. Thank you all for listening.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.